Chapter 16. My Family, My Child. In the late summer of 1942, at about 4 a.m., we were taken unawares. The Jewish quarter was encircled by SS, Gendarmerie and Schutzpolizei, Polish police and Ukrainian special forces, Sonderdienst, who we feared the most. Shots came from everywhere. People were beaten, houses plundered and demolished. They attacked us like vultures. Each one of them acted like a predatory animal when he grabbed a Jew. Resignation was the only feeling left for the victims. On that morning, 600 to 800 Jews were driven from their houses to one central point. Through loudspeakers, a message came. Anyone staying in their homes or hiding will be shot immediately. All Jews must report to the collection point. Some families were given 10 minutes to leave their houses. There was no way out. We stood at the collection station and waited while our fate was determined. The usual routine was started. Gestapo Chief Fischer arrived with his entire staff and his dog. The elder of the Jews and his assistant Grünblatt were standing close by with a list from which the names were read. Each person called had to cross the street and take his place in line. During those unbearably tense moments, our attention was concentrated entirely on the names being read. The judgment of the Yom Kippur prayer, who is to live and who is to die, was pronounced by Grünblatt in the name of the SS. Soon we noticed, however, that those who were called had been selected to stay. We were experiencing a so-called selection. About 70 names were called. They were working Jews, but without their wives, children, parents, or other family members. Only the elders of the Jews, Lichtenstein, and his assistant were allowed to keep their families with them. I was the only useful Jew in my family who was called. My mother, my father, my brother-in-law, my sister, and their child remained. Up to the last second, my sister and brother-in-law wanted to trust their bosses from the Overbeck Company of Bremen, who had often promised to help their loyal working Jews, but their hopes were in vain. The ones who were driven together at the collection place were encircled by the SS and the police. Older people who could not walk were shot on the spot. Screaming women were beaten with rifle butts, and some children standing in the way were shot. Only a few Jews had suitcases, blankets, or coats. Watching the moving lips of some, one knew that they were reciting their last prayer. When my family saw that I had been selected to stay, they gave the key to our apartment to my sister's child, who was supposed to bring it to me. It probably was a last attempt to rescue the child, since the apartment was not really locked. In any case, she crossed the street with a smile on her face and came to me holding the key in her little hand. As though by miracle, no one stopped her. She came and handed me the key. I was also able to hide the child among the crowded rows of those chosen to remain. Thus she was saved, at least temporarily. For all of us at that collection point that day, it was our last moment together. Each of us knew that the way to Treblinka led to the gas chambers. My family and I, too, looked into each other's eyes for the last time. There was no hysteria, hardly anyone cried. The pain seemed to silence our speech. Our quiet glances said everything. Some regarded it as God's judgment. Perhaps that eased their pain. Those who had been chosen to stay went home. The others were soon forced into trucks and taken to the extermination camp of Treblinka. Thus, once again, I was kept alive, if one can call that living. That day marked the end of the Jews of Rodzin. It was also the end of my world. Like all others, I lost my family, my beloved parents, my second and last sister, and my brother-in-law. Lonely, I stayed behind with a 6-year-old girl at my side, my child. How often have I reproached myself for not sharing my family's fate? Would it not have been just? What is God's justice? At that time, I wished that the earth would open and swallow us all. I'm sure that this was the hope of most of us, but alas, the earth did not open. I do not know where we got the strength to walk home. I took my last beloved family possession, my little Sara Lezusman, by the hand, and made our way home. Her child's hand seemed to be securely attached to mine. We looked at each other without saying a word. I was 19 years old, the girl barely 6. In reality, Sarah had aged more than I had on that day. Until then, she had been a sweet, merry little child. Suddenly, she stopped laughing. When I went to work in the morning, Sarah insisted on accompanying me to the door of the office and waiting until she could not see me anymore. 5 or 6 steps led to the entrance. Every day she came and waited for me on the steps that led to the office door when lunch began around 1. After lunch, she accompanied me back to work and waited again until I disappeared from view. In the evening, she waited again on the steps. It was the very same every day, even in cold and rainy weather. At home, too, Sarla did not want to be apart from me. She even insisted on sleeping in the same bed. She fell asleep only by hugging me with all a child's might. I cried, but I didn't want her to notice. She had lost not only the ability to laugh, she could not sing any more either. She spoke softly and answered every question intelligently and to the point, but she said little. She never cried, played, complained, questioned, or asked for anything any more. She was an entirely different little girl. I had seen and experienced many things during the last 2 years, but nothing shocked or depressed me more than what transpired in these days and nights with my child Sarla Zussmann. Her eyes radiated a certain something which I can only cry about, but not describe. I did not have any money or valuables. We lived from the food that we still had at home. The few meals, if one can call them that, we had, were always eaten together. It was a bit like a bird feeding its young, mouth to mouth. Each of us wanted the other to have his or her fill first, so the other might live longer. Sarla transferred the love she had felt for her parents to me. Her feelings were an unusual mixture of sudden seriousness and a strong childlike love which both surprised and challenged me. As much as possible, I played my role and tried to make life easier for Sarla. I would use all my energy in trying to cheer her up, distract her, and play with her. Unfortunately, without much success. It seemed that I was laughing on the outside, but was full of trouble and sorrow within. One realized that the child knew the entire truth. She knew that her parents had been deported and killed. She listened with indifference whenever I told her that her parents were on a trip and would soon return. Sarla knew better. One could read her face like an open book. She knew that soon all of us, including herself, would be sent to Treblinka. She did not believe that she would see her mother and father there. She lived only for a short time, my child, only a few years, like almost all Jewish children of the time. In her suffering, the travail of all them was expressed. Whenever I see a picture of the thousands who answered the question of their Nazi propaganda minister, whether they wanted total war by bellowing, "Yah!" then I also see Sarla against whom the total war was waged. Against this unique children holocaust, which can be found nowhere else in the history of mankind, no child raised his or her voice, nor pointed a finger, nor gave testimony. Children may be victims, but not witnesses. Besides, they are almost all dead. I saw women suffering, heard men crying, and witnessed the greatest agony of all, the agony of children. That is an anguish which cannot ever be forgotten. Fortunately for both of us, my sister's sister-in-law soon joined us. She went into hiding during the big Aktion and escaped her tragic fate, at least for a time. She took her niece to her and cared for her in the way that a woman can do so much better than a young man. I was thankful to her for this.